Hello and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. And we got a lot of great stuff for you this month. Let's get going with beer news. Tucked into the $900 billion COVID relief bill passed in December was a provision which made permanent a temporary cut to the federal excise tax on beer originally passed 3 years ago. The provisions of the legislation reduced the excise tax for breweries making less than 2 million barrels from $7 to $3.50 on the first 60,000 barrels of production. But, presumably to garner the support from big beer, it also reduced the tax from $18 to $16 on the first 6 million barrels of production for all breweries. The top-line numbers make it look like this unalloyed good news for small brewers who only pay $1.75 on a keg of beer, a half barrel, while big brewers have to shell out $8 a keg. To put this into perspective, the federal excise tax is a levy placed on top of regular federal taxes, regular state and local taxes, and state beer taxes. Also note that breweries are the ones taxed here, not distributors or retailers. Many people feel that taxes are warranted to offset the social malignancy of alcohol. But the excise taxes fall only on one segment of the beer industry, which is already more heavily taxed than most industries. There are good and bad arguments for why these taxes should exist, but they are extra taxes above what breweries already pay. The government didn't just give breweries a sweetheart deal relative to, say, booksellers. They're still paying a lot of taxes. Due to the COVID pandemic, the annual Alaska Beer Week event has been reimagined this year as Alaska Beer Month. A major part of the redesign is the new Alaska Beer Chase. This is a month-long statewide scavenger hunt that's designed to bring people to the beer and to the happening beer places in the state in duos and trios, not droves, and over time rather than all at once. Tickets are available at myalaskatix.com for $22.86, all fees included. You then download an app which lists various challenges for you to complete. Each challenge earns you points, and the person earning the most points wins the grand prize of $500. Alaska Beer Month started on Friday, January 15th, and runs through Sunday, February 14th. Senator Pete Michiki has again pre-filed his bill to revamp Alaska's alcohol regulations. This is something he's attempted to accomplish for the last several legislative sessions. This year, the bill is designated as Senate Bill 9. I will have a feature story about it later in the show. There's another new brew pub in the process of opening, Big Delta Brewing Company in Delta Junction. We'll have an interview with them later in the show. Grace Ridge Brewing of Homer reported that in 2020, they donated $17,466.01 in tips to local Homer nonprofits. Ockel, famous as one of the six Belgian Trappist breweries, is no longer considered to be a Trappist brewery. One of the requirements to be considered an authentic Trappist brewery is that the monks must supervise the brewing process. Due to deaths and retirements, as of December, there are no longer any monks living at the monastery. Ockel was the most recent of the Belgian Trappist breweries and only started brewing in the late 1990s. The beer will continue to be produced, but it can no longer be made under the Trappist label. That's it for our news items. Up next, we'll have our first interview. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We're talking to Lee Ellis, head of brewery operations at Midnight Sun Brewing Company, and the president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. Hey, Lee, how you doing, sir?
Doing great, Bill. How are you today?
Excellent, excellent. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. So, tell us what's up with Midnight Sun these days, with so many of us not being able to travel around the state like we like to. We don't get the news as much.
Yeah, you know, we're surviving in the age of COVID, so you know, that's a positive these days, is that you're still treading water and surviving. The kind of reduced production and difficulty in the market has fortunately let us brew some beers we wouldn't otherwise get time to brew. So we've actually been putting out some fun beers in the last couple of months. So kind of the bright side to everything. And yeah, we're looking forward to a more positive 2021 and getting our tasting room fully open again and seeing a lot of our you know, liquor stores and bars and those kind of things opening back up and folks being able to get back out there and enjoy a craft beer.
Hey, from your lips to God's ears, buddy. So what are some of these new brews you've got coming out? I think I saw you just released a new Imperial Stout in 12-ounce bottles.
We've been mixing around with 12-ounce and 22-ounce bottles in the last year, so we've been kind of releasing stuff in different formats. We took Berserker this year, and we actually blended it with chilies and cacao for more of a different take on Berserker, so that came out as Berserker South of the Border. And actually that beer was, has been very, very popular and actually really, really nice. So we've been kind of looking at different ways to kind of, change up some of the things that we've done for many, many years. We've got a Baltic Porter that's going to be coming out in February called Palvi. We just released Obliteration 10, which is a, triple IPA brewed with, quick yeast. So the Scandinavian farmhouse ale yeast. And then we also just released a beer called Two Brewers, One Cup.
That's the one I was thinking about. Yeah.
That's our racy label for the year. It's Imperial Coffee Brown and, it's pretty phenomenal as well. So, you know, like I said, brew some cool stuff. We have a hazy that's out right now. We were only able to put it in draft due to, shortages in cans. But that's called Denial and Error. And so that one's still kind of out there. I think we're about to finish that up pretty soon. And then, we'll have a special Valentine's Day beer this year. It's called Love in the Time of COVID. So it's actually our Monk's Mistress Special Dark Belgian Ale that has been aged in Cabernet Sauvignon barrels.
Is that one going to be in bottle or just on draft?
That one will be in 22-ounce bottles. Cool. And then we actually just finally got some aluminum cans in today. So we actually have a salted chocolate caramel porter that we will be putting into cans here later in February.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm glad you can make lemons from the lemonade and use the slowdown to, like you say, put out some more interesting stuff. So. That's good to hear.
Finding production space to put, sour beers into production and, you know, big oak aged beers is always challenging. So we've been kind of spoiling stuff away and we'll have pretty cool releases actually throughout the year. We've got a wheat wine coming up at some point here and then another beer that we brewed with some retailers down in the Tacoma area that is a Belgian barley wine that's been aged in both cognac and port barrels, and we'll be doing a blend of that, releasing that here later on winter, early springtime as well.
Cool. Yeah, that all sounds great. So what are you guys up to for Alaska Beer Month now? Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that as put your BGA hat on for a second and talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, this year, obviously, because we can't have too many in-person events and we're not having our big annual beer festival in Anchorage, so we decided to extend it a month. So that way we kind of all have some time to play around and put on some cool events. So we're actually doing a tap takeover at the Palmer City Ale House, the night sun is, and I believe it's next week, Thursday night. Check our website. I'm not 100% sure on every date or anything, so I highly recommend using the old Google to solidify your plan. But yeah, you can go on akbeerweek.com, and there should be information there about different events going on. So lots of different breweries are doing events throughout the month. Some are tasting events. We're doing cellar events here at Night Sun, tap takeovers, and those kind of things. So yeah, just a whole month of celebrating craft beer, which is more fun than a week, and we'll see if we can all survive that.
Yeah, that's a good idea, that, you know, to, as you say, to spread things out a little more, give more people a chance. So I applaud you on doing that. So talking about BGA stuff, what's your take on the latest version of Senator Michikis' bill? I think it's Senate Bill 9 this year. The numbers keep getting lower and lower. I can remember when it started out at 76, so eventually I guess it'll be number one. But anyway, what do you think of this latest take at it?
There's a few changes this year, but nothing particularly affecting craft brewers over last year's compromise that we struck with Char. Over the years, there has been various agreements among stakeholders about the bill. But we were able to come to an agreement last year and make some compromises that settle the issue so that we can get this passed. Huge bill, 125 pages. I'm actually, I have it on my desk here, and I use it to slam on my desk when I want someone's attention. But it is definitely probably the biggest bill before the legislature this year, and pretty critical for us to get it passed. I mean, before it was definitely important because there was a lot of important streamlining of regulations and how licenses are issued and all those kind of things. Because, you know, when the last Title IV was written, it was written prior to craft breweries even existing. So there's been a lot of piecemeal changes, and this kind of collects them all up and cleans them up and streamlines things so that it's a lot easier for people to go through the licensing process. The licensing process for setting up a brewery is highly complex and extremely time consuming. So we're trying to make that a little bit easier, because it can oftentimes take up to a year, and you've already invested in equipment, space, and those kind of things, and that really limits folks' entry into the market, because that's quite the investment to pay rent on a commercial space, buy all that equipment, and wait for such an extensive period of time before you can actually start to produce products.
Well, that'll be good. That'll be good for you guys in Anchorage, because you can still have new breweries. But the way I do the math is, it basically is said, forget the Kenai, can forget about having any new breweries. If we're going to get one for every 12,000 population, we've got 7 breweries down here now and only 55,000. So I guess we're already over our limit. So we'll can forget about having any new ones down here.
Yeah, that limitation is actually on brewery retail licenses, not breweries.
Right.
So one of the changes that's actually occurring with SB 9, as opposed to what's going on now, is that breweries are limited to 1 to 3,000. Under SB 9, there is actually no limit on the number of breweries that can be producing in any community anywhere in the state of Alaska, but actually removes population caps on production.
Right.
What it does do is it puts a limit on the retail tap room.
Right.
But other changes that occur within that bill is that breweries will have better access to BDLs. So if you want to run a brew pub, and that's actually one thing that we noticed, Alaska is actually somewhat deficient in its actual number of brew pubs in the state. Nationally, about 38% of all the breweries are brew pubs. In the state of Alaska, it's somewhere around 22%. So less breweries in the state have actually moved to that model because there was caps on production. And those caps will go away under SB 9. breweries in the state of Alaska are not allowed to hold a restaurant eating place license. That will change under SB 9. So more breweries that offer food similar to like Midnight Sun and Kenai River Brewing Company will find access to those REPO licenses. And that's really interesting because down in the lower 48, most often what breweries will do is they have their manufacturer license and then they get what's called a beer and wine license, which is what an REPL is in the state of Alaska, just that our beer and wine license has a requirement for food service. So while the taproom model will be limited under SB9, the opportunity to open up different models that we have not previously had access to will be occurring.
That's what you see places like St. Elias and Kenai River here on the peninsula moving towards.
Yeah, where they absolutely.
They wouldn't even get a brewery retail license. They would have a manufacturing license and then just a restaurant eating place license.
Yeah. So there's you know, the potential that breweries will start expanding the type of models. You know, a lot of people are concerned about the number of tasting rooms we have, but we've been forced into that model with really no other access to market other than that. So it'll be interesting to see how this population cap will affect it. It'll also be interesting to see how broadly breweries will be able to expand their operations and change the way they do retail, because we could also have package store licenses now. And that's pretty interesting. So like we at Midnight Sun have been considering that license type, and we could sell not just Midnight Sun beers, but we could also source stuff from around the world that we think is interesting, or around the state. You know, it's a different way of influencing the retail sector, and I think there's a lot of potential in that. So that 1 to 12,000 originally, when SB 52 was submitted, it was supposed to be 1 to 9,000. For retail licenses, that was continued to be a concern for the Bar Owners Association and the wholesalers because we operate in a limited entry system and there's obviously concerns on their side, you know, whether I agree or not, but those limitations were there because you basically when you get that license, you buy up a access or a segment of the market, and then they were concerned breweries were diluting it with their tasting rooms, and not even just breweries, really. It's that 1 to 9,000 was 1 to 9,000 wineries, 1 to 9,000 distilleries, 1 to 9,000 breweries. So in effect, it was 1 to 3,000 for tasting room, but 1 to 9,000 for each individual type of industry. And that's how that number basically came up. So now it's effectively 1 to 4,000 for any type of tasting room. So it's kind of a complex issue, but we were able, recognizing that that was something that the bar owners were extremely concerned about. We didn't really want to make a change to the population cap. So we asked for some concessions from the Bar Owners Association, and they agreed to make changes in SB 52 and now SB 9 that would allow our tasting rooms to be open until 10 p.m. It will allow for entertainment and a complete rewrite of the entertainment language. So now you can bring your own board game or your cards or whatever you want to do into your brewery, and allows us for 4 live events per year. We got some significant changes on that side for kind of loosening up what tap rooms can do. And then furthermore, you know, folks get other types of licenses now for retail storefronts. The breweries can have concerts and all kinds of things now that they have access to different license types. So I think the 1 to 12,000, a lot of people get hung up on that, but I think that it's, you know, kind of missing the forest for the trees, that there's going to be a lot more opportunity for breweries to do different things. And, you know, it's kind of like you've been trapped in the same box for so long that you can't imagine, you know, living on a farm.
Yeah. So, well, it would be interesting if the state ever really bit the bullet and, you know, just bought back all the licenses out there and changed the system and basically said, okay, you no longer have you don't have a property interest in this license. You know,
this will not be the end all to the conversation of how we manage the alcohol industry in Alaska. You know, the state is one of 17 states that operates on this limited entry system. And I think a lot of us have concerns about that entire system in and of itself. That's created the value of the secondary value of licenses. It's created all of these restrictions because everyone feels like they have to carve up the industry to a certain way. And other states don't see that because they don't have a limited, you know, limited entry system. So it's, yeah, it's kind of a, you know, a little bit more of a free market.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they treat the drinkers like we're crab or salmon. We're a resource to be harvested, and everybody is worried about, you know, over harvesting. And if you make, mm-hmm, you know, make money on that, I'm losing money, and this kind of idea. And I realize it's a bit of a pipe dream, but boy, I'd love to see us get rid of this whole limited entry thing and go to just a more normal. You know, it's a business like any other. If you think you can make money selling beer, then we'll give you a business license and, you know, pay your taxes and good luck, as opposed to this, well, I don't know if we should let you sell a beer in this town, you know, kind of a deal.
Yeah, it's interesting because the marijuana industry is not limited in their retail points or manufacturing. And they are going through some struggles with oversaturation of the market. And it'll be interesting to see how the fallout occurs in that industry. But, you know, the reality is that the limited entry system is pushed by the folks in public health. And oftentimes my response is, if limited entry system is a solution to public health harms of alcohol, has it been successful in the state of Alaska?
Yeah.
You know, the answer to that question is and from my standpoint, is probably no, but certainly there's a lot more research and quantitative data that we would want to use before we'd make that case. So we may look to the future for a different alcohol industry, but for today, this is what we have.
Well, the problem would be to fix it would take a fistful of money, which is one thing the state doesn't seem to have very much of right now. So,
yeah, and the limited entry system occurs across various industries in Alaska, and one of the other big ones is commercial fishing. You know, with limited entry permits on fishing grounds, you know, we've discussed this graying of the fishing fleet, and you know, now you got to buy a boat, you got to buy a permit, and it's as much as, you know, a nice 3,000 square foot house, and you're asking 20 somethings to make these kind of investments, and it's very difficult. And I think we see a very similar aspect in our alcohol industry, where we've got a graying of the alcohol industry where, you know, in order to buy a permit, buy the bar and get everything in, it doesn't leave much money for innovation and change. So those are all kind of issues that we're wondering if they're successful market-wise and economically and still meet some of the desired positive outcomes with public health.
Well, as the man said, we live in interesting times. Lee, so much appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, my friend. Stay healthy. Keep fighting the good fight up there in Anchorage.
Yeah, I will. I will never give up on this this dream of craft beer in every hand. So,
all righty. Thanks a whole lot. Appreciate it. That's Lee Ellis from Midnight Sun Brewing Company. We'll be right back with our next segment here on 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. In our first feature, let's talk about the prospects for Senate Bill 9 that I mentioned in the news items. One of the subjects that longtime listeners of the show were probably familiar with is the seemingly never-ending effort by State Senator Peter Michicki to pass a bill to restructure Alaska's alcohol regulations. I've talked about it numerous times, and back in December 2017, we actually had Senator Michicki on the show to talk about it in detail. But for those of you out there who may not have been following my reporting on it, let me give you some of the backstory before moving on to recent developments. Title IV, the portion of Alaska State Code which licenses and regulates alcohol sales, was last overhauled in 1986. Since then, there have been many changes in the alcohol business, the most notable being the growing popularity of craft breweries and distilleries. Over the past three decades, these various new issues were dealt with by different legislatures on an ad hoc basis, with the end result that Title IV has become confusing, contradictory, and hard to enforce. Everyone agreed that a rewrite was necessary, so all the stakeholders, bar owners, brewers, package store owners, distributors, law enforcement, mental health advocates, et cetera, began meeting some 9 years ago to try to hammer out a consensus bill which could make it through the legislature. As is typical in situations such as this, one with so many players, many having diametrically opposing views regarding alcohol, the key to achieving consensus was to preserve the status quo. It was important that no one be perceived as winning something at the expense of others. And in the end, that is how things more or less worked out. The final proposal streamlined and rationalized the licensing process, raised fees paid to the state, and increased penalties for minor consumption, but it did not fundamentally change the balance between the various parties. The limitations on brewery and distillery tasting rooms remain exactly the same, licenses continue to be limited by population, and so on. No one had achieved an advantage, so all parties appeared willing to accept the new structure. The bill was introduced to the legislature by Senator Michicki in the 2017 session, where it languished in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for the entire session, thanks to the legislature's inability to get much done during that year's contentious sessions. With the start of the 2018 legislature, Senator Michicki again introduced the bill, and late in the session, things began to happen. The bill moved fairly smoothly through the required Senate committees and was unanimously approved by the full Senate and sent to the House on April 30th. And that's when the wheels came off. The bill was referred to the House Labor and Commerce Committee to be followed by the House Finance Committee. Labor and Commerce scheduled public testimony for the bill on Thursday, May 4th, and Friday, May 5th. While some bar owners testified that the bill did not do anything to help them, numerous others from the various stakeholder groups testified that it should be passed as written to preserve the consensus it represented. On late Friday evening, the committee voted unanimously to amend the bill to reduce the daily limit of beer which a brewery could serve a patron from 36 ounces to 24 ounces per day. The amendment also reduced the amount of alcohol a distillery could serve from 3 to 2 ounces per person per day. In other words, the amendment cut the on-site retail sales volumes for craft manufacturers by one-third, a direct cut targeted at the income of Alaska businesses that comprise roughly about 4% of the state's alcohol industry. At first, you might seem surprised that a committee which had previously had absolutely nothing to do with this issue would take such a controversial step so late in the process, but when you look at the committee's members, the explanation becomes quite plain. The resolution was introduced by Representative Louise Stutz of Kodiak, who owned and operated a bar for 25 years, and it was supported by Representative Adam Wohl, Democrat of Fairbanks, who owned and operated one. Conflict of interest issues never seem to be very far away in the Alaska legislature, but you seldom see lawmakers acting so clearly and obviously to benefit their own personal financial well-being at the expense of other citizens. Despite the vote being taken late on a Friday, word quickly spread through the craft brewing and distilling community around the state, generating a massive backlash. Editorials opposing the change appeared in the Anchorage Daily News, the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and the Fairbanks Newsminer. The Brewers Guild of Alaska encouraged craft beer lovers around the state to contact the House Finance Committee to demand the amendment be stripped out, and by the following week, over 1,100 citizens had done so. Things appeared to be gearing up for a major fight just as the legislature was trying to wrap up its session. On Wednesday, May 10th, Senator Michicki, acting as the bill's sponsor, withdrew his request for a House Finance Committee hearing. As part of his announcement, Senator Michicki stated he was taking this action, quote, following the adoption of an unfair and self-serving amendment in the House Labor and Commerce Committee on day 109 of the legislative session, end quote. This action essentially killed the bill for that year. I think it's worth quoting the senator's reasoning for his action. The following is from the press release which announced his withdrawal of the bill. I introduced this bill because I agree with and admire the spirit of consensus. A primary goal during the formation of this bill was to protect the rights that Alaskan business owners have today. This amendment goes against all of that. I will not allow a singular special interest group to hijack my legislation to the detriment of other Alaskan businesses because they are viewed as competition. It is antithetical to Alaskan values, small business, and economic freedom. Title IV is a mess. It's a mess for the industry, the public, and the state that attempts to enforce it. I think one of the most powerful parts of this process, and one of the reasons we made it this far, is that everyone who participated was able to look beyond their own self-interest and consider the big picture and a system that is better for everyone than the one we have today. So that was the end of the 2018 attempt, which was the closest the bill has come to actually passing. Senator Michikee introduced the bill again in 2019, but it never made it fully through the committee process. He introduced it again on 2020, but like so much legislation, it was scuttled by the outbreak of COVID-19. So now we find ourselves at the start of the 2021 legislature with the bill again pre-filed this year as Senate Bill 9. I very much wanted to interview Senator Michikee to talk about the current version of the bill and its prospects for passage. However, despite several calls and texts asking for an interview, I received no response to my request. Since his recent election as Senate President, I can only assume Senator Michikee has been too busy to get back to me. So you will just have to be content with my analysis of the 125-page bill. If you would like to read it for yourself, the complete text is posted on the State of Alaska website. I've spent a fair amount of time looking through this latest version, trying to pick out which changes in it would be of interest to the average consumer, as opposed to those of interest only to people in the industry. Here are the major things I noticed. First, the bill creates a new brewery retail license, which is a type of license a brewer would now need in order to be able to sell their product to the public in a tap room. Currently, this is allowed under the brewer's manufacturing license, but SB 9 would create a separate license. Holders of this license would operate under most of the same limitations currently placed on tap rooms, such as being limited to 36 ounces per person per day, no live entertainment, no stools at the serving counter, etc., etc. The bill would allow tap rooms to stay open until 10 p.m. rather than the current 8 p.m., and it would allow the brewery to obtain up to 4 special event permits per year in order to have live entertainment on site. This is something brewers have long asked for so that they could host a few events annually to celebrate things like the anniversary of their opening, Alaska Beer Week, and other notable occasions. The bill also clearly states that brewery retail license holders may hold events designed to showcase the brewery's products, like beer tastings, and that it may allow other businesses or community organizations to provide classes or hold fundraisers on the premises. This means, for example, if I ever get around to finishing my next beer book, I could hold a book signing at a brewery without putting them in violation of state law. So all that is the good news. What's the bad news? Well, the bill would change the rule limiting the issuing of a brewery retail license from the current rule of one license for every 3,000 residents to one license for every 12,000 residents. To put it another way, the bill says there should be 4 bars and 4 package stores for every brewery taproom in Alaska. It also means that the 7 breweries currently operating on the Kenai Peninsula are more than the authors of this bill think we should have. Since the population of about 55,000, we would be allowed no more than 5. All our existing breweries would be grandfathered in, but you can forget about any new ones opening if this bill becomes law. Frankly, this is clearly ridiculous. If the concern is about the misuse of alcohol, I submit the ratio should be the other way around. Let's have 4 breweries for every full-service bar and package store selling hard liquor. Furthermore, every community on the peninsula already has more bars and package stores than they theoretically should have, based on the 1 license per 3,000 population rule, yet it hardly seems to me that we are awash in either bars or package stores. So why the sudden push to reduce the number of allowable brewery licenses to a mere 25% of the previous total? This is something I very much wanted to question Senator Michikee about. It's pretty obvious that this change is another attempt by the bar owners to hamstring what they see as competition for brewery tap rooms. If I could, I'd ask Senator Michikee to explain whose interest is being served by outlawing any new breweries on the peninsula, that of the consumers he ostensibly represents, or that of a special interest group with deep pockets and well-funded lobbyists. Perhaps at some point in the future, we'll all get to hear his answer. So that's the current state of play with respect to Senate Bill 9. I will do my best to keep you all informed of any changes or further developments. Who knows, at some point you might even want to drop your legislators a note and tell them what you think of these proposed changes. Up next, we'll have our second interview. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We've got Jake Wade, the operations manager of Bear Paw River Brewing in Wasilla. So, hey, Jake, how you doing?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So, you know, you guys, you just celebrated your anniversary, right? Last
yes.
month,
yeah,
if memory serves?
Yeah, it was a 5-year anniversary. We had a really great day. Quite the milestone for us.
Yeah, 5 years. That's a big one. So I can remember when you guys opened. So how fast the children grow. So, and you guys are putting up your new location, right? How's that going?
It's a very big and busy undertaking, and with the current operations happening, everyone around here is sort of extra busy. But things are going really well so far. We're on track for our construction goals. So we are just getting more excited every day as we see the progress over there and looking forward to moving into it.
Your target is like May or June, right? Am I remembering right?
The current target is June.
June, okay.
And that can change a little bit here and there, but June sometime.
And it's right there on the highway by the train station in downtown Wasilla, right?
Yep, that's correct. Okay. Yeah, it's very visible from the highway.
You guys, your current location is kind of nice, but it is tucked away a little bit, so people kind of have to know where it is.
Yep. Yeah, the current location's it's not actually in Wasilla city limits. We're in the Nabatsu borough, but we're on a busy road here, and we stay busy, and so we like our current location, but we really ran out of space and just need some more room. And some faster, better equipment, that kind of thing. And so we're looking forward to making a jump.
Well, I'm going to miss that Thai joint that's just a few doors down, because that's some of the best Thai food I've ever had. I hope they're still there. It's been a while since I've been up there.
Yeah.
They're still there.
And
good. Yeah. So why don't you tell everybody about how you're expanding your equipment, what you're going to have in your new place?
Yeah, so we're gonna do a 30 barrel brew house, and so we have a 10 barrel now, so we're gonna jump to a 30, and then we're gonna bring on some 60s immediately, and then, you know, we've got some room in there to bring on some more tanks, and so whether or not those are more 60s or 90s or 120s, we're not sure yet, but yeah, 30 barrel brew house with some 60 tanks. We're buying the Cody canning line that several other places have purchased now in Alaska.
Good. I hear good things about that one.
Yeah. They seem to be a good company, and they communicate well. I talk to them frequently now that it's kind of getting down to the wire of actually purchasing the thing. They've been good to work with so far.
So you get released any interesting beers lately?
Yeah, it's been a nice, I wouldn't say there's anything positive about COVID, but with the slowdown, we've been able to do a variety of other beers. And so we've got a new one that's going to release next Friday, which will be a coconut imperial stout, which we're going to bottle in 22-ounce bottles. Yeah, last Friday we released a porter called Night Ride Porter that we released in 16-ounce cans. And those are available in the tap room and a variety of other places that we're sort of self-distributing to. Yeah, and so we've got a couple of hazy IPAs in the works. We've got an Irish Red going. And then we're going to do a few Belgians here coming up. So trying to keep it fresh and trying to keep the menu diversified.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've heard several brewers say is that the one silver lining of COVID is it actually slowed things down enough so that they could try a few different things rather than just trying to keep up with the demand for their flagships. So,
yeah.
What did you guys release for your fifth anniversary this year?
We did. It's an Imperial Stout. So we're doing an Imperial Stout that we call Old Matanuska Made. And we did sort of a linear box set. And so we had 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020 that we sold in a box set. And that did really well, and the boxes turned out really great with a local engraver that put our logo on the box. And so, yeah, it turned out great. And it's the perfect time of year, especially today with a -5 at my house this morning. So it's the right weather for a big beer, you know.
You had me beat by one. It was -4 at mine.
Yeah.
It's like you say, this is the time of year and the weather for the Imperial Stouts and the barley wines and stuff like that. The winter warmers. Well, that's great. So anything else going on?
You know, we're taking it pretty easy for Alaska Beer Month. Unfortunately, we're all so busy, the four owners and the employees, keeping up with what's going on with the expansion and keeping up with can sales. And so it's a busy time of year for us, which would not ordinarily be a busy time of year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we're not doing a lot for Alaska Beer Week, but we look forward to participating with it a little bit more in the new place.
Well, great. Well, hey, good luck. Keep me in the loop about developments. And when you guys throw a marker at the map and say this is going to be the grand opening date, let me know, and we'll be sure to let everybody know here down on the peninsula.
I will. Thank you, Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk with us, Jake. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Now, this is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. At the start of a new year, I always have to wade through numerous online articles and even posts from friends and acquaintances about how they are giving up drinking alcohol for the month of January. The so-called Dry January idea originated in the United Kingdom, but it's become pretty popular in the U.S. as well. Personally, I have no intention of giving up beer for January. During my 20 years in the U.S. Navy, I had plenty of months of forced sobriety during my deployments, so I don't feel the need for any more, thank you very much. However, given that one of the arguments often cited to support the idea of a dry January is that it will produce health benefits, this seems a good time to revisit one of my favorite topics, the health benefits of moderate beer consumption. Ancient Egypt is where the concept of medicinal use of beer first began to flourish. Ancient Egyptians used beer as a medicine to treat stomach ailments, coughs, and constipation. Over the years, archaeologists have discovered over 100 medicinal recipes from ancient Egypt that utilized beer as an ingredient. In ancient Nubia, people were using beer as an antibiotic to treat everything from gum disease to infected wounds. Fast forward to the Middle Ages and Renaissance era, and beer was often seen as a nutritional necessity. Furthermore, it was sometimes used as a medicine to treat pain and various types of illnesses. Today, much research has been gathered over the past century that has found many promising health benefits provided by moderate beer consumption, as well as various negative effects from heavy beer consumption. Some of the promising effects of moderate beer consumption include a stronger, healthier heart, improved cognitive function, lower bad cholesterol levels and higher good cholesterol levels, lower risk of dementia, and more. When it comes to heart health, moderate beer consumption should top the list on one's diet, according to various studies. One study conducted on 36 adults over the course of 12 weeks found that moderate beer intake, one beer for women and two beers a day for men, improved antioxidant properties of the good, HDL, cholesterol, while also improving the body's ability to remove bad, LDL, cholesterol. Another large review study stated that low to moderate beer intake could lower heart disease risk the same as drinking wine, which is widely lauded as an antioxidant and healthy beverage if consumed in moderation. Moderate beer consumption has also been revealed to be beneficial in lowering the risk of type 2 diabetes. Several studies conducted over the years found that light to moderate alcohol intake appears to reduce insulin resistance, which is a risk factor for diabetes. Other studies have found that light to moderate alcohol intake may improve blood sugar control. A large study in over 70,000 participants associated moderate alcohol intake with a 43% and a 58% lower risk of diabetes for men and women, respectively. Another common misconception about beer is that it leads to brain damage. However, although heavy drinking can cause mental decline, light to moderate beer consumption actually improves memory and overall cognitive function. One study conducted by Loyola University out of Chicago found that moderate beer consumers are 23% less likely to develop Alzheimer's or dementia than those who don't drink. Another study found that beer consumption actually helps improve your trivia nights, with participants solving puzzle games faster than non-drinkers. They also found that participants were 30% more likely to find unexpected solutions than those who didn't drink. Beer consumption has also been shown to improve bone density because of the presence of silicon, an essential bone-forming mineral found in your pint. A review published in the International Journal of Endocrinology found that moderate beer consumption increased bone density in men and could be potentially beneficial in reducing the risk of developing osteoporosis. There are also many health benefits that are derived from hops, which is good news for hoppy beer lovers and beer lovers in general. Hops have been shown to reduce inflammation, be antibacterial, increase HDL, the good cholesterol, and decrease LDL, the bad cholesterol, and have anti-cancer properties. Another health benefit found within beer is that of polyphenols, a category of compounds that are naturally found in plant foods such as fruits, vegetables, herbs, and dark chocolate. Polyphenols act as antioxidants by neutralizing harmful free radicals that would otherwise damage your cells and increase your risk of illnesses like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. They are also anti-inflammatory and great stress reducers. It should be noted that all the various health benefits that one can derive from sipping on their favorite brew vanish when one steps outside the bounds of moderation and into the realm of heavy drinking. One study conducted in Scandinavia found that people who regularly drank heavily decreased their life expectancy by 24 to 28 years in comparison with that of the general population. Heavy drinking can also lead to heart failure, cancer, obesity, and more. Not only does heavy drinking cancel the health benefits found in beer, but alcohol consumption can hinder performance in athletes as well. Beer can inhibit muscle growth, slow down recovery, slow down reaction times, and dehydrate your body. Not only is this bad news for athletes, but it's also bad news for anyone trying to make gains in the gym as well. Several studies have revealed that regular alcohol consumption was linked to decreased levels of testosterone in men and increased testosterone levels in women. So if you want to make gains in the gym, then keep your drinking to a minimum. One positive note in regards to beer and exercise is that there have been studies that found a correlation between drinkers and the motivation to hit the gym. One study surveyed 40,000 American adults and found that compared to abstainers, moderate drinkers were twice as likely to be physically active. Moreover, as the intensity of the activity increased, so did the strength of association with alcohol consumption. So if you're seeking a motivational tactic to hit the gym, you can try sipping on your favorite brew a little more, but always in moderation, of course. And in order to derive the most health benefits from beer, remember to always drink your pint in moderation. If beer isn't your go-to drink, wine and liquor possess many of the same benefits as beer, so don't hesitate to sip on your favorite wine or cocktail. Mind the calories and the sugar, however, in moderation. Also, make sure to incorporate exercise and a proper diet to derive the most benefits from your alcoholic beverage. So while all you folks swearing off alcohol for January may like to think it's healthy, the science says that when I enjoy my one beer every evening after dinner, I'm really making the healthier choice. All this brings us back to our main question. Is beer healthy? The answer, when consumed in moderation. When imbibed in excess, like so many things, the answer is a resounding no. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll come back and check us out again next month. As always, we end with a great beer quote, this time from the legendary Frank Sinatra, the chairman of the board. He said, "Alcohol may be man's worst enemy, but the Bible says love your enemy." Here's hoping we'll all have a great month, and we'll talk to you next time. Cheers.
Mm-hmm.